Previously on the provability gap.
There were moments that it would hit me and just be like world crushing. Like I was raped. My nurse let me see all the pictures that she was taking. And so seeing that too, I was like, oh my God, how is that my body? He texted me and I had a number to give to them. I was like, okay, they're gonna get this guy. My kit had come back and there was no DNA. And I immediately broke down. You know, the rape itself was trauma, but what happened afterwards was also trauma.
When we last heard from Marina Garrett, she had been told her case was declined for prosecution because there wasn't enough evidence. We also learned that Garrett wasn't ready to give up. She's one of eight plaintiffs who filed a class action lawsuit alleging the city of Austin and Travis County mishandled their cases because of gender discrimination. Austin Police Chief Brian Manley and former APD Chief Art Acevedo are two of the defendants in the suit. So I wanted to take a look at the city's police department to see if there are mistakes that were made. But first, let's zoom out for a minute to understand this crime a little better. Even though anyone can be sexually assaulted, women are twice as likely to be victimized in Texas. In a 2015 study, UT Austin's Institute on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault found that 20% of men will experience some form of sexual violence in their lifetime. But for women, it's 40%. Based on Texas's current population, that's nearly 6 million women. And only 9% of victims will actually report the crime to police. 9%. The average number of adult sexual assaults reported to APD every year is roughly 500. But with so few victims filing reports, we can expect the actual number to be far higher. Over the past few months, I got the chance to speak with Garrett and five other victims who did decide to report. Some, like Garrett, agreed to be named for this story. We're using pseudonyms for others. And even though every one of their assaults was different, each of them had similar criticisms for what happened after they called 911. This is the provability gap. Part 2, the police.
Do you feel like women are not usually believed in these situations?
Absolutely. You know, my detective did make me feel believed, but I've talked to a lot of survivors who did not feel that way, who were questioned very harshly.
Garrett was the only victim I spoke to who said she felt believed by her detective. Read any other news report about sexual assault and you'll likely see this same concern echoed by victims across the country. Only between 2 and 7% of reported sexual assault allegations are false, but victims still say too many law enforcement officials are defaulting to disbelief. And the worry isn't only in their head. Historically, sexual assault law has been set up to protect men from false allegations. For example, there was something called the Lord Hale Rule. It stems from a 17th century lawyer named Sir Matthew Hale. Basically, he argued,
rape is an accusation that is easy to make and hard to prove. The word of the victim would not itself be sufficient to establish the elements of rape absent some other corroboration.
That's UT law professor Jennifer Lauren. Essentially, she's saying that traditionally, not believing women has been baked into the law itself. And if you're thinking, well, yeah, but that was centuries ago. Experts say requiring corroboration of a victim's accusation was formally employed up until the 1970s.
There's this conventional wisdom that's pervasive in sexual assault law that victims can sort of wield accusations of rape as a sword rather than a shield. And I think that there's been a lot of effort to change attitudes in that respect, but they have existed. And I don't doubt that they continue to exist to some degree.
This isn't to say all police officers make the assumption that women are making false allegations. But even the most well-meaning detectives can mistakenly think a victim is lying if they are not trained to spot signs of trauma.
Most people think that if you experience a rape or an attack of some kind, that people are going to run away or they're going to fight back. But that's traditionally not true.
That's Kristen Lanau. She's the co-founder of the Austin-based Survivors Justice Project and is well-trained in the neurobiology of trauma.
based on the research, we know that women who are sexually assaulted tend to experience that as a life-threatening incident.
She says that means there will be some sort of survival response. Many of us have heard of fight or flight, but there's a third one, Lanau says, is less well-known, the freeze response.
It's a protective response. You know, it's our brain kind of switching into a different mode, and it's telling our body, you can't overcome this, you can't overpower it. So in order to protect you from injury or death, we're going to wait this out.
Think about a deer in headlights. Lanau has been working with sexual assault victims for more than a decade, and she says this is the most common response she's seen from women. And it's something the victims themselves struggle to understand.
They're just asking a lot of questions of themselves about what happened. Why didn't I move? Why didn't I fight back? Why didn't I scream?
Even if a victim didn't necessarily freeze, law enforcement could still be misunderstanding other aspects of an assault if they're not factoring in trauma. Take the case of Emily Borchert, one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit against APD in the DA's office. In 2018, the UT Austin student was strangled, kidnapped, and sexually assaulted by three men over the course of 12 hours. Police identified the men, but according to police reports, the APD detective thought parts of the attack sounded consensual. Even though Borchert's hospital reports show she had bruising all over her body, her detective said because she'd complied with some of the attacker's demands, they'd have a hard time getting a conviction. Here's Borchert's mother, Sarah.
Everything she did to minimize the harm done to her was kind of held against her. If she had had more physical injury, they probably would have been more willing to go forward with it. But the most psychologically damaging thing that happened to her was the rape. It was the rape, and that's insignificant.
We reached out to APD, but a spokesperson said they could not comment because of the pending lawsuit. But based on Kristen Lanau's description of victim behavior, Borchert's decisions were in line with what many victims do during a trauma of this magnitude. She says when that fear sets in, a person will do whatever they think will keep them from getting hurt or killed.
Whether that's giving someone your wallet if you're being held up, you know, whatever it is, if we feel overwhelmed and threatened beyond our capacity, we will go along with things to protect ourselves from further harm.
Lanau says she's troubled by the fact that some police officers and detectives don't seem to have a solid grasp on this when they sit down with victims.
Law enforcement are typically and traditionally trained to interrogate suspects. There is not a lot of built-in training into this culture and into this profession around interviewing victims.
She's not the only one with this concern. The Austin-Travis County Sexual Assault Response and Resource Team, or SART, released a study last year aimed at better understanding the community response to sexual assault. 75 people were interviewed, sexual assault victims, law enforcement officers, advocates, and attorneys. An overwhelming majority of them said there's a need for more trauma training for patrol officers, detectives, and prosecutors. Now, APD does send new recruits to a conference that provides trauma training, but most experts agree that one training in the first 6 months after an officer is hired is likely not enough.
We have to retrain ourselves and law enforcement to understand that the victim's behavior is going to be completely different than our expectations.
That's former Austin Police Sergeant Elizabeth Donegan.
I ran the sex crimes unit for 9.5 years. Then I was in the sex offender unit for 6.5 years. Following that, I retired out of the sex offender unit, nearly 26 years with the PD.
After she retired, Donegan became known as one of the country's leading experts in the way law enforcement responds to sexual assault. She's also been publicly critical of the Austin Police Department's handling of these crimes.
If you don't understand how deeply personal the crime of rape is, you don't need to be doing this work.
Donegan, who's running for Travis County Sheriff, says she agrees that trauma plays a critical role in sexual assault investigations. But another big issue is
there is not enough people working in the sex crimes unit.
One of the main criticisms victims shared was that they rarely, if ever, got updates about the status of their cases from detectives. Throughout the 2 years Marina Garrett's case was pending, she says the only time she got updates was when she called herself.
I called my detective all the time. All the time. I cannot stress that enough.
Sexual assault survivor Hannah Sanko echoed these complaints. She also agreed to be named in the story. Sanko was raped back in 2007.
I would classify it as a rather typical date rape scenario where a drug was placed in my drink and I had no recollection of events from the evening.
Sanko says she immediately reported the attack to police, but what came next left her jaded.
It's largely a wait and hear back game. And I had to place many phone calls trying to get information over several months. And so it was a pretty disappointing process.
Donegan says this lack of communication is a problem and can sometimes lead victims to drop out of an investigation.
But as an investigator, if you have 15 cases that you're working that month, you're just doing what you can to keep your head above water.
Right now, APD has 17 detectives in the sex crimes unit, but 4 of them are assigned to cold cases. That leaves 13 detectives to work on current cases. According to Austin Police, there's an average of around 760 reported adult and child sexual assaults every year. That's more than 60 cases a year for each detective, not including the investigations that have carried over from prior years. Put in perspective, APD's homicide unit has 12 detectives and works an average of 30 murders a year. That means about 2 to 3 new cases per year for each officer.
I believe that all of those investigators and the supervisors want to do the right thing and will do the right thing. But when you're overwhelmed, you're understaffed, you're triaging.
Austin Police Chief Brian Manley said he's aware staffing is a problem and expects the city's review of sexual assaults will come to the same conclusion.
I anticipate as we take a closer look at the operations and again work towards ensuring that we're practicing best practices, that we will identify a need for additional resources within the unit.
But Donegan says all the training and resources in the world won't lead to more prosecutions unless police departments start prioritizing the more difficult and more common types of sexual assaults, the ones in which the victim knows their attacker. UT Austin's Institute on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault found that 70% of sexual assaults in Texas are committed by someone known or related to the victim. In Austin, it's around 90%.
And I don't think the community in general understands that. They think sexual assault is a stranger. It's the bad guy jumping out of the bushes, crawling in the window at night.
But Donegan says those are a very small percentage of APD's cases. Most of these crimes look more like what happened to Sarah Jones.
My name is Sarah Jones, one of the plaintiffs on the lawsuit.
Jones chose to use a pseudonym to protect her identity. One night in 2017, she says her ex-boyfriend drunkenly came to her house, yelling outside her door. He refused to leave. Her son was sleeping, and after a while, Jones let him inside. She said she'd call him a cab.
I'm a human being. I don't know what else really to say about that.
They began to have consensual sex, but it quickly turned violent. He ended up strangling and raping her.
He hit me so hard across the face that I thought my eardrum had burst on the opposite side. And I tried so hard not to scream so loud, but I grabbed my ear because it was excruciating.
When it was over, she ran to the room where her son was sleeping and locked the door until her ex-boyfriend left. The next morning, Jones called Austin police. She went to a local clinic to have forensic evidence collected. Even though her attacker was arrested within the month, the district attorney assigned to her case ultimately decided not to move forward with the sexual assault charge. They did move forward with the strangulation charge, but that was ultimately dismissed, according to court documents. Jones says her prosecutor told her she was not a credible victim. It was all because of a past arrest where she hit another ex-boyfriend after he'd made fun of her son's speech impediment. She got 3 years probation.
They took my case for one punch that didn't even cause any injury so seriously. And because of that, I was an uncredible victim.
We asked the Travis County DA's office for comment, but the office said they couldn't because of the pending lawsuit. Even though Jones is the only plaintiff in the lawsuit who knew her attacker, cases like hers are more typical. Marina Garrett says one of the biggest reasons she felt police took her case more seriously was because her attacker was a stranger.
I think it's a lot easier to believe when it's a stranger. So I was definitely believed. But, you know, if it had been someone that all my friends knew, if it had been a family member, I don't know if I would have been believed. I don't know if I would have spoke out.
Researchers at the training organization End Violence Against Women International say many people, including some in law enforcement, still believe a quote-unquote real rape is committed by a stranger.
And it goes back there for, I think, several reasons.
Again, former Austin Police Sergeant Elizabeth Donegan.
No one wants to believe that you're going to be raped by your coworker or the person that you lay in bed with at night or a friend. But those are the majority of the cases.
Donegan says prioritizing stranger cases means police officers are likely to be less equipped to handle the complexities of a non-stranger case.
If we intend to keep our focus or we keep our focus on stranger cases, we're missing about 95% of the non-stranger cases, which are incredibly difficult and complex, much more so than stranger cases.
For example, officers still rely heavily on DNA analysis in these cases, but forensic evidence is usually needed only to prove the identity of a suspect or if sexual contact occurred. More often than not, especially when the victim is raped by someone they know, Donegan says the focus of an investigation is on overcoming the claim that the sex was consensual.
So the detective has to unpack, is this what the victim said or the suspect?
In order to make an arrest in that kind of case, police look at evidence other than DNA. This involves digging into the personal lives of the people involved. And Donegan says this often puts the burden of proof on the victim.
Unfortunately, in many instances, victims are the ones who are on trial. From the moment they choose to tell someone, their credibility and believability is challenged. And we need to shift that paradigm. We need to shift the understanding about what real sexual assault is and what that looks like.
Even if Austin police believe there is enough evidence to overcome the consent defense, it's up to the Travis County District Attorney's Office to ultimately decide whether the case goes to trial. Two Travis County prosecutors work hundreds of sexual assault cases that Austin police investigate. And when it comes to whether a DA thinks a case should be tried, APD says those prosecutors' opinions weigh heavily on detectives.
I sincerely believe that we would have more arrests if there were more detectives in the sex crimes unit and prosecutors who were willing to take these difficult cases forward to educate and change the culture in Austin.
Next time, we'll ask the Travis County District Attorney why her office doesn't take more rape cases to trial. And we'll hear from a UT law professor who says these prosecutors could be doing a lot more. This is The Provability Gap. I'm Nadia Hamdan.